popping my bottle.
Nice. Let's see the bottle.
Hold on. Gotta make a little pour.
Oh, yeah. Pour first. That's the priority.
Yeah. So we went on a little journey to New Hampshire this weekend, land of tax-free booze, and also an extensive collections in their state store. Saw this one, which I don't think I'd ever seen before. It's by Redwood Empire. So they're out of Northern California. And this is called Pipe Dream. It's a bourbon. And it's got this great almost, it looks like almost like a woodcut print label of a body of a man with like leaves spouting out of his, where his head would be. And it also has, it has a John Muir quote, "The power of imagination makes us infinite." That's what I'm drinking today.
Love it. Love it. I finally have something different. I have Michter's bourbon.
Ooh, that's a good one. I like their rye.
I know you do. Yeah.
Well, cheers, John.
Cheers. Yeah.
I got a little bit of a rant today.
I'm up for it.
But I got a rant in the direction of some helpful things to say. Hopefully.
a rant with a conclusion.
Yes.
All right. Tell us what we're ranting about.
Well, I want to rant about paid family and medical leave. That is anytime a human being has a baby, adopts a baby, is a co-parent to somebody, birthing a newborn, has an ill family member, is ill themselves, like anything that you would need to care for another human being. The ability to take time off from working in a supported way to do that. So that's what I want to talk about today.
Okay. I know you want to give some history, like where we are in the United States.
I do want to give some context. Yes. So this is the rant part.
Can't wait.
Because as you know, I wrote about this recently. I went on a sort of deep dive research rabbit hole recently about this topic because Wanderwell, we have a team member who just gave birth to their first child. And so they're currently on what will turn out to be by the end 16 weeks of paid leave for that life event. There's a baby boy. He's very cute. This threw me down a whole rabbit hole because we actually didn't have a full policy to support this before, partly because it's just not come up. But I also realized in retrospect that that's like not cool. Like we should, especially for the sort of full, you know, medical care for a loved one or oneself, like we really should have had a policy in place that would have been helpful. But this sort of threw me in a deep dive and I started to get really mad because it's so hard in this country, in the United States. And we are one of only six out of 186 countries in the entire world that does not have any kind of national paid leave policy or like system set up. So that's the context. And the other thing, this is the other thing that's crazy, is like we've had, there's been some efforts, because I wanted to find out, like, why do we not have this?
That was going to be my question. Do you have thoughts on why the United States is so inadequate?
So there's a couple of, like, historical benchmarks. One is that a lot of the sort of international standards for this kind of leave came about in the context of World War I and a lot of labor organizing that was happening in the wake of the war. This happened both the World War I and World War II, where young men were drafted, men who were in the workforce, being sent to war, being conscripted into soldiers. At the same time, a lot more women were also pulled into the workforce to replace those men. So that's where you get, like, in World War II, Rosie the Riveter, that kind of image. It's not that women weren't in the workforce before, but the women that were in the workforce were either seen as temporary workers, like once I get married, then I'm going to drop out, or traditionally like poor, poor women, women of color, immigrants that had to work, you know, were of a class where working was necessary. With the war, expansion of women in the labor force. Wherever there are women in the labor force, that means there is a possibility of pregnant people being in the workforce. And I'm talking in that context. We know that all types of bodies can become pregnant. Mm-hmm. But World War One ends. All these, you know, returning heroic soldiers, particularly in Europe, come back. And they really took advantage of that status to start agitating for better workplace practices. So 8-hour workdays, job protections, all sorts of stuff. Same thing, a lot of women were summarily like laid off as soon as the men came home, and so tried to get a seat at the table in all this organizing. I'm giving like the very brief, fast history of this, and we'll post the what I wrote about this if you're interested in more of the details.
Good.
But out of all of this work, there was the creation of the International Labor Organization, which was sort of the first international convening of a body looking at labor standards and like better working conditions for workers. And ultimately out of this, there was a maternity protection convention that was adopted. That's where the sort of first standards for any kind of paid family related leave came about. That was specifically focused on mothers giving birth, but eventually became, you know, expanded, especially in the United States. United States did not adopt it at that point. Some countries in Europe did. World War II happened, sort of same dynamic. Lots of men went to the front lines, lots of women went into the workforce. But I think one of the interesting structural, at least early explanations that I got into that made a lot of sense to me was that post-World War II, in Europe in particular, they suffered from a huge population loss. Lots of men not returning to the workforce, lots of women also killed, you know, civilians killed and things like that. So Europe, you know, as a body of countries, wanted to incentivize women giving birth, but also still maintaining the workforce. That's when a lot of maternity leave, paid maternity leave programs were cemented in Europe, at least. So that makes sense. They're like, mm-hmm. There's an economic incentive.
We need more babies.
We need more babies. We need to replenish the population. We also don't want to lose workforce. We think we need to, you know, get back to work. The United States had the opposite problem. So didn't suffer population loss in the same way. I mean, there are a lot of dead soldiers, but not in the same kind of way. There wasn't destruction on the North American continent. So it's almost sort of the opposite incentive is that they, you know, there was a concern that any kind of paid leave would not keep women home. They wanted women out of the workforce because men were returning home. They wanted men to be able to take their jobs back. And I'm saying they, but this is sort of like economic forces, government in general, and how it gets legislated. So there's some specific people involved, but this is more about the like economic forces at work. So that's sort of the grounding, like, modern context. But then since then, there have been a number of times when legislation has come up to change this in the U.S. Build Back Better Act was the last, which is in 2021. That was the last time that there was any kind of paid leave provision. And of those 180 countries that have some kind of national paid leave, the average length of time is 6 months. Which sounds astronomical batshit sitting here in the United States.
I have no words.
Right?
You're no, like, I'm kidding. What? It's crazy. Yeah. Right. For us. Yeah.
So the original thing that was on the table was 12 weeks. I think it got whittled back by 4 and then ultimately axed because, you know, that's what we do here. The last thing I'll sort of say about this rant, at least about the historical context and how we got here, is as I was doing all this work, I started to kind of reframe the language of how I was thinking about it in my head, because a lot of the op-eds and stuff that's written about this and why does the U.S. not have this kind of leave, like we're one of the wealthiest nations on the planet, how could we not just figure out how to do this? And I started to think about it as we are one of the wealthiest nations on the planet, because we don't have this. It goes all the way back to the founding of this country, an economy built on enslaved humans. Like, this is not, this is like origination story, original colonialism and, you know, enslaved population generating a whole lot of wealth. And so I see that similarly today is like, we're not caring for people when they need to take care of other people, because that would cost money. It would have financial impact and it would perhaps dim profits and things like that. So, you know, I see this as very causal and started to see it that way. So it's a lot to get mad about.
It is a lot to get mad about. I was getting mad when I was reading your piece. And I mean, it's just hard to believe that, not hard to believe, but we're just so inadequate in our system of leave. I mean, that's government either mandated or provided leave, right?
Yes. As a country, we do jack shit. Really, the only nationalized thing out there is that there are some legal protections, like for pregnant people to not lose their jobs. Like we have a lot of anti-discrimination protections for people with disabilities, for pregnant people. For larger businesses, there are also more legal protections, the FMLA, Family Medical Leave Act. That's a job protection piece of legislation, but it only applies to businesses with over 50 full-time equivalent employees. So small businesses, you're welcome to fire your pregnant people. It's fine.
Right.
No, just kidding. You can't fire them, but you don't have to give them their jobs back.
And FMLA is just job protection. It's not paid leave during that time.
No, it's a protection for taking unpaid leave.
Yeah.
So, you know, small businesses, mostly, we are not required to do anything. A lot of what's happened now, we don't have anything nationally, but there are a handful, there's about 13 states that have adopted some form of state-mandated leave. The way that happens is very different depending on the state. But again, you know, each state's different, but mostly the stuff in place, it's going to impact larger companies. You know, the thinking there on a certain level makes sense. Like, small businesses don't have the resources, usually by themselves, to, say, like, cover a salary for 16 weeks entirely. Like, that's a big ask. You have to have a lot of resources to do that, especially if you have to hire a replacement, which you often would. So the thinking is, like, we're not going to subject small businesses to these rules. It'll be onerous on them. But at the same time, it means we're really left to our own devices to do anything at all. And we're also not supported with any resources to help. So it kind of puts us in, like, this double bind of, you know, we're not required to do anything, but we also don't get any support to do so in most cases. That's sort of the other piece of it. You know, what I want to talk about when we get to the let's be a little bit helpful and not just despair at the shitty, abysmal state of how this country cares for people. You know, in general, I think one of the ways that I think about businesses, period, is as they can be systems for caretaking. So a business can generate more resources than like one individual by themselves as like a system. And so, you know, you can use those resources a business generates, profit, money, whatever, to take care of people. And so that's kind of what I want to talk through today a little bit, is just give some like guidance, some thoughts on like where, you know, where your efforts might need to be focused if you want to think about providing paid leave of any kind.
Great. I want to hear that.
But I also want to say, I guess, as the caveat, which is that small business owners can deeply care about our people and have values that point us to treating our people really, really well. And your actual ability to do that might very well fall short of what you wish you could do. And it's also going to be heavily dependent on what kind of business you run and just the state of it, but even just down to the business model. Like, there's stuff that we've been able to do. We're a service business. We have low overhead. there's a sufficient resources, more so than like if I ran a bakery or like a brick and mortar retail or something like that. There's a lot of kinds of businesses with lower margins that are often going to have fewer resources to sort of make this work.
Your business also, though, every employee you have is somebody who's generating revenue for your business, right? Yep. So taking one of them out, it's different than an employee in a bakery.
Yes. I would say that's the sort of flip side, is that Wanderl currently, in its current form, it's basically there's three seats on the bus. There's three positions. Each of us directly does client work and generates revenue. There are three roles that rely on a pretty high level of experience and expertise. So I can't just pull somebody off the street and like throw them in as a replacement. That would be a disaster.
Yeah.
You know, there's other businesses models that say you do run a retail operation. Maybe your existing folks pick up a little bit more work or other shifts while somebody's out, so you don't necessarily need to rehire. Maybe there's some work that doesn't need to happen for a period of time while someone's out. So there's some businesses, depending on your model, where you'll be able to like squish work around or pause stuff. Maybe you don't need to like think about this. And then there's some, like Wanderwell, where like we definitely had to hire one-to-one replacement, and then also have a period of training and like overlap. So that means overall, like my payroll costs definitely higher for this period of time. There's sort of three areas to look at to solidify, like if you want to think about your business as a system of caretaking. And the first one is money. Money meaning, really in this case, cash flow and profit, which are not the same thing, but they are related. The reality is even if you're in one of the handful of states with like a strong state-run family leave program, and we got really lucky, the employee that's off lives in Washington State, and they actually have one of the best social funded, paid, it's run by the state, sort of like unemployment insurance. There's nothing that exists that will cover the full salary for an employee out there. There's nothing. And so, you know, your ability to ensure that your employee doesn't miss a paycheck or have to, you know, live off of reduced pay while they're on leave is going to depend on your profit and your cash flow and like just what you're able to sustainably as a system, as an ongoing system, provide. My advice to people is not to try and overdo it. I'm speaking to the people that care a lot and like really want to provide well. And the worst thing you can do is overcommit beyond the resources of the company.
I mean, I think that hits your point on you might have an ideal about what you want to do and really feel like is important to you in terms of your employee caretaking, but like the economic reality is the economic reality.
No. And don't like close your eyes and pretend it's something different, because that's just not going to help anybody at the end of the day.
You said there were three pillars. So money being key.
Second one is systems, and particularly documentation, I would say, of systems.
You know, I love that. Keep going.
So my colleague friend Jenny Blake calls this the Fiji test, but often it's called the hit by a bus test. I like hers better.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody gets whisked off to Fiji spontaneously.
Yeah. Oh, I'd much rather go to Fiji than get hit by a bus. Right?
Yeah. Yes. Right. So can someone step in and do the job of the person that got whisked to Fiji? And generally, that's going to depend on how well documented your systems and processes are. Everything I'm talking through, even if you don't have some pending disappearance to Fiji of somebody or, you know, planned leave. If we learned anything from the pandemic, like wacky shit can happen and, you know, somebody can need to be out at any point. All of these will point to where you can strengthen your business, period, whether or not you need these policies or you're going to send somebody off on leave. We've been working on this stuff for years. So I didn't even really think about this part at first. I was like, oh, yeah, like, yes, it will be easy. But I don't want to take that as a given because, you know, this is a good thing to think about. It's like, what documentation, especially if you need to replace somebody while
right.
they're
this off. Is so somebody can step in to replace the person who's not there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Even with all of the stuff that we do have, like, we have a whole database with step-by-step processes written out, with email templates. We have, each client has their own, like, process hub, tons of notes, how-tos, and whatnot. Even with that, we ended up identifying things that could be strengthened just for this handoff.
It sounds to me like you had Wanderwell in a situation that a lot of businesses or small businesses are not going to find themselves. They're going to be scrambling for systems like this.
And I think part of this is like, you may not have somebody that has a planned leave, but this stuff will provide positive stress tests if you think through it. So if you use like a fictitious scenario of somebody disappearing to Fiji next week, you know, and start to plan through, like, where would shit hit the fan hardest? That will give you a roadmap for what areas to strengthen.
I think it takes a lot of work, and it's not necessarily work that's like, you know, the revenue generating work. So you have to make sure you're finding time and making that a priority so it happens.
Yes. So the third one is policies. This is one you're going to love.
Yes.
And policies are, I think of these as guardrails that, you know, in their essence, lay out how a business relates to people and takes care of people and lays out sort of expectations and obligations between the business and the, so the kind of stuff that underpins the relationships. You know, it's definitely about compliance. A lot of policies are about, like, am I following state and federal laws? Like, Washington State has certain, like, rules about family leave and how it works. Some of, like, creating policies at least like this, and if you have employees in multiple states, like I do, it gets to be kind of a complicated pain in the ass sometimes because you have to cross-check that anything you write covers whatever states you have employees in. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they're not uniform. That's a rant for a different day.
Okay.
But the other part is consistency. I'm sure you could say some legal stuff about this too, but
I'll let you.
Making sure that you're not making shit up on a per employee basis.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. What you just said is, you know, you had a goal that was your consistency, right?
Yep.
But in your particular case, you know, the state of Washington was going to make a certain amount of contribution, and then Wanderwell was going to make a certain amount of contribution. You couldn't have that exact same policy if an employee was not in as generous a state as Washington.
Right, which is exactly what happened and how I had to design it, because I'm in Vermont, but I'm not really subject to this because I'm not an employee. But we also are in New York State, which has different rules. And New York State has a mandatory paid leave, but it's through insurance. I had to obtain private insurance. The state actually backs one, so they have something that's easy to apply for and set up. But it's different from how Washington works, and it's less generous. So in Washington, the 16 weeks is a stacked thing. It's somebody gave birth, and then they're also, I think it's baby bonding is the other piece of it that ends up being able to allow somebody to take a full 16 weeks off paid. Since Washington State only allows for 12 weeks, I made the policy for 12 weeks because 16 weeks is actually such an outlier. If you look around at states, that's wildly a lot of time in the United States, though far, far short of that 6 months that we talked about as the average. So it made sense for consistency's sake to not commit to a 16-week because that would put it out of sync with other states. What I did was basically just set a percentage limit of what Wanderwell would be able to contribute above any kind of third-party benefit, whether that's from the state directly or through insurance. What gets left out, and this is the shitty part, is if you do like what essentially would be a disability insurance, that's what New York sets up, there's a lot of circumstances that we would cover for paid leave that aren't going to get covered through that. So taking care of a parent who's ill or a child that's ill or, you know, baby bonding time, like, you know, it's really about, are you sick? There's a lot of circumstances that like Washington State's going to cover that, you know, New York's not going to get covered because
or,
of how...
Or your disability policy isn't going to cover.
Right. Or if you're, if you're in a state with nothing and you obtain private disability insurance, it's not going to cover a bunch of this stuff. And this is the shitty part where like you kind of just got to do consistently the best you can. We hire someone in a state that doesn't have any of this and they need leave. They're only going to get paid a percentage of their salary. And they're going to get nothing else, third part, you know, and that sucks. And it's also like, that's where I have to like privately be despondent and also be real about the limits of what I can do with the business. It's not my fault. We have a shitty system that doesn't support this stuff.
You can only do what you can do.
You have to be consistent. You have to consider all of the context of employment and kind of stick to the midline more than the outlier.
I know that there's this thing that I hear from less progressive clients.
Yes. Yes.
When you're the employer and you're like, oh, I'm going to, you know, my big concern about like a parental leave policy is that, you know, I'm going to pay this money and the employee will have this benefit and then they'll take it and quit.
But, you know, every time I hear that, like, I can feel, like, the heat rising in my head.
That's why I brought it up.
I know. I'm going to, like, throw a glass across the room. Yeah, no, this is a really common thing. I'm sure you've seen this where folks have, like, lock-in clauses where if you exercise this benefit, you're committed to, like, 6 months of indentured servitude to the company on the back end.
Or you have to pay it back or some crap like that. Yeah.
I think those are morally repugnant things to do personally. It's an interesting thing of like, what do people owe you? And it just reinforces to me the sickness underlying sort of all of the stuff in this country of employees owe you their labor. We don't take care of people. God forbid we have to take care of people. They got to owe us more. Like, I think what's really at root at that is, like, I want to be able to exploit people. And if I happen to, like, pay out some more money when they're not, you know, producing value for me, then they definitely owe me more. I don't have anything to say to that other than, like, I'm sorry, check your values.
Right.
Yeah, people can quit. Sorry. What if you thought about it as something that you're offering because they've worked for you so far?
That's the point. And I mean, I think if an employer really was just looking at it that way, I mean, if they wanted to, they could say, okay, you have to work for me for a certain amount of time before you become eligible.
Yeah.
For this.
And I think that's fair.
Right.
You know, and often that's true with a lot of the state systems that have it. Like they have thresholds where, you know, an employee can't come on the job first week and then go off on paid leave. And that makes sense. I think that's, you know, that's very disruptive to a business and it's going to like jam stuff up. It doesn't mean that somebody can't do that. It just might not be paid in the same way, you know. What this all comes down to is we're leaving this to individual business owners to sort out themselves. If we actually had a system that cared for people and didn't leave it up to individual business owners to be generous people or be like morally depraved or not, like, we wouldn't be having all these conversations.
It would be there for them. Right.
It puts the business in a bad position, too, I think, to be the where the decisions about caretaking come from.
It limits the options because of the things you were talking about before. It relies on the owner to have a perspective about profit and employee caretaking that's like yours.
Yep. I wrote about this, but did you catch, there's this woman who's the CEO of a baby products business that caught a lot of, she was the internet's worst character for a week because she fired a employee for working remotely because they had a new baby in the NICU. The reason why I bring this up, though, is that this company had a similar policy where I think they only gave 2 weeks paid leave off and then required employees to sign a contract that they would stay on the job for 6 months after that 2 weeks of paid leave off, which is just outrageous.
That's BS. They probably don't give them a lot of vacation either that they could apply against their parental leave.
No. All right, so I just laid out some things. What if you can't do jack shit?
What if?
One, that doesn't make you a bad person or a bad business owner. There's a whole, as we've just talked about, there's all this structural stuff that is working against you being able to take care of people. But you brought up, John, PTO. Hopefully, you have some kind of PTO. You can definitely let people use that as their policy. If you can only do 2 weeks paid off, that's better than nothing. I think one of the ways to think about this, and this is like your policies can change over the time. So if you're just starting out in a baby business, you might not be able to commit to much of anything. And that's just going to be how it is. And then as your business evolves and hopefully gets stronger, you know, you can incrementally add on to that. You might want to work towards 12 weeks and you start with 2. Mm-hmm. Or you start with 10% and you work to 30%. Figure out incrementally kind of what you can do.
Yeah.
And this is why you should save profit in your business. Don't let your accountant talk you into shoveling out the door at the end of the year. That's always a mistake.
Exactly. That is what I thought you wanted to conclude with.
Don't buy a bunch of shit because your accountant tells you to.
Or just take it and put it in your pocket.
Yes, because that profit was generated by everybody in the business. It's there to take care of everybody in the business. All right. Cool. Cheers, John.
Cheers, Kate. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Thanks for listening to Whiskey Fridays. Whiskey Fridays is a collaboration between my friend and colleague, John Gerber, who you can find at unlawyer.com.
And my friend and colleague, Kate Tyson, who's at wanderwellconsulting.com.
If this episode resonated with you in any way, we'd love for you to share it with a friend.
And if you have any whiskey recommendations, please share those with us as well.
Talk to you next time.
Thank you.
Is that too ranty?
No, it's great. A good amount of rant.